Roz in Crawley, good afternoon.
Hi there, Jeremy.
You've had a friend in Basra.
Yeah, my friend Mark has been was serving in Basra for quite a long time with some of the restructuring projects, and he's currently involved in getting some of the translators that worked with him out of the situation that they're in at the moment. The whole situation in Basra has brought very strongly home to me on Saturday night when Mark asked me to witness a conversation he was having with somebody in Basra, one of the translators that's been left behind. And I basically just was going to recount some of the things that was told to me by this person in Basra.
Yeah, do.
Yeah. Basically, this gentleman worked for a period of time for the British Army, and he's now in fear for his life. What was very worrying is that his brother was lifted from the streets of Basra a couple of weeks ago and was held captive for 2 days and tortured during that time to try and give up the location of his brother, the translator, who's had to have been moving around Basra for the last 6 to 8 months continually every week to different safe houses, etc. But what was very concerning that we were told was that basically his brother was lifted by a combination of police and militia. The impression that I got is that the militia have been infiltrating the police force, and they had the standard issue Motorola radios, uniforms, etc. of the police. So there's no real way for the common person, you know, Iraqi person on the street to tell whether somebody is from the police or the militia now, which is basically what we were told on Saturday night.
Right.
So this person and a number of other translators are basically, they say that the situation is chaos and they don't know who they can trust. And that the help they've had from the British government is basically they've been issued with a reference number and an email address. And that, you know, a good proportion of them have been deemed to be unacceptable as far as the criteria that the government issued in October.
They had to be on 3 month contracts, is that right?
A lot of them, you know, I mean, it was a very ad hoc situation when people were out there. And what's been quite worrying is a few of them have been rejected for absenteeism when they were actually advised to stay home by the British Army when their lives were being threatened while they were actively working.
So your friend who was there, does he, having come back, does he feel he's looking at a disaster that's about to happen or what?
Absolutely. And I mean, he feels very passionately about trying to help the people that helped him while he was out there. He has actually, obviously, you know, contacted Parliament and been involved in the campaign, which is We Owe It To Them .com. But basically what I wanted to say was, you know, that the trust that's on the street from the average person. And as I say, I witnessed this whole conversation.
Yeah.
And I wanted to pass this on so that people could experience what I did on Saturday night, which is that it really did bring it home to me. You know, when we walk down the street, we know a policeman, we can trust them, et cetera, or mostly anyway. But the situation that's there at the moment, and I think I do sympathise with the Iraqi chief of police that, you know, he's when he says he's dealing with militia, what he actually has got is militia within his own ranks as well.
Okay, Roz.
So it's a fairly dire situation.
Thank you very much for calling. All the best. Steve in Preston echoes that. He says, I served in Basra. I trained the Iraqi police force and troops. 3 days after their passing out parade, some of the troops we'd trained opened fire on us. They were fighting alongside the militants. There will never be peace.